It's Loose Cannons here with another podcast for you. Today we're going to be talking about 1975's Shivers, directed by David Cronenberg. And we've got our usual castmates, Basil, Ilya, Patrick, and me, Ruben. Who wants to kick it off? Well, I guess I'll say with this one before we even start that I believe this was a rewatch for me, Ilya, and Basil.
Yes.
I think Patrick is the only one who's coming to this for the first time.
Yay.
And we all had positive opinions on this film before, but I guess we'll see if it held up on rewatch and what everybody thought. So does anyone want to start us off?
Let's go with Patrick last, since he...
I'll go last.
Either first or last, one or the other.
I'll go last.
Okay.
I'll listen to what you guys say.
Well, the movie to me was definitely stayed as positive, if not more positive now. So this is going to be a real... I would really be surprised if any of us really like this movie less now than we did before. Because actually, really, to me, a lot of the things I liked about the movie the first time were things that I now like in movies much more in general. And some stuff that I didn't notice last time, I just noticed now and realized that this movie is really, really great. That this is actually probably my favorite Cronenberg movie with The Fly. This and The Fly would be my favorite Cronenberg movies.
Mm-hmm. I will say that actually on rewatch, the cheapness of the aesthetic was distracting to me in a way that it wasn't the first time I watched it, because I was so engrossed by the weirdness of the story. There were other parts that were also better than I remembered last time, so it really balanced out to still being a really great movie, in my opinion, and probably my favorite Cronenberg as well.
I agree with what Ruben said, in that the cheapness of it bothered me more than I remembered and was more noticeable than I remembered, especially some of the effect things. Some of them were still really disgusting and creepy, but but other ones, like the one shot where it's like crawling away into a bush, it very obviously looks like just some rubber thing on a string that they're pulling into the bush, but... but I'd say, yeah, this used to be my favorite Cronenberg movie, and maybe it still is because I haven't seen any of his movies in forever, but I did like this a little less this time than I remembered. Just a little. We'll get into it.
All right, Patrick, cap us up.
I really did love this movie. There was a point in the movie where I was just like, I just like was like laughing to myself, and I was just like, "I love David Cronenberg." I think it was the part where the three people jump off of the elevator and just start like going to town on the security guard, and like the little girl like leans over and like you know gives him the like shivers kiss, and I was like, "That's so gross and weird."
Did you know? I don't know if you noticed this, but that little girl, she was eating the pie.
The guy brought the pie onto the.
She had taken the pie.
Pie continuity.
Disgustingly eating the pie. So, at what point during the production of this film do you think David Cronenberg said, "Can we make the shivers look more like poop?" It's like, they kind of look like turds now. I want people to really be confused as if they're just like turds, just like crawling around everywhere.
Oh my gosh.
They are very brown and awful.
They definitely reminded me of.
And they leave a little poop stain.
They really do, yes.
And it's like. The scene where it's like coming into like the bathtub, I'm like,
oh my god,
finding its way into the bathtub.
I wonder if this movie inspired that scene in Caddyshack.
Maybe there is a Resident Evil game called Resident Evil Zero that had something very similar to the shivers. So that was like, it was like a little like slug thing that would crawl on the wall and it would like infect you or whatever, and you had to shoot it. That was like a big part of that game, so I didn't really know where that had come from. before now, but then I saw it in this. I was like, oh, okay, that must have been what they were doing, the little shivers. Mm-hmm. But no.
One of the things that I was excited about in this movie that I didn't know the first time that I watched it is that the nurse in it is in one of my favorite movies, Score. I recognize
right.
it.
Right. Like, oh, wow.
I was like, is that so-and-so from Score? And I was like, oh my God, it is. I love her. And she gets to deliver the best speech in the film, too.
She does. That's true. Right. I only just realized that now, by the way, that she was in Score also. And that this is not the first time that I've seen this relatively unknown actress really naked in a movie.
That's
actually
her trademark,
the
apparently.
Second time.
I kind of like that she's in both Shivers and Score, because Score is a movie that's completely about like sex freedom and like joy and like not, you know, caring about all these the dark elements of sex. And this is 100% the opposite. It's as far as possible on the same basic thematic ground as you right. can go, whereas sex is completely terrifying.
It's true.
This makes me wonder if Cronenberg might be kind of like a conservative dude, because in some ways I could see this read as like the fears of like the conservative world about like what the sexual liberation of the 60s would actually look like this like horrifying world where everyone's just having sex with each other all the time and they can't stop.
Their daughters, their children, yeah. You know, little girls. It starts off as kind of like an STD metaphor, and then it becomes sort of like a pansexual, terrifying mess. It kind of loses the STD metaphor.
Yeah.
When it's like,
it's just
you know,
like sex like zombies, basically.
When it's like a dad offering his daughter up.
Right. Yes, exactly. You will like my daughter, Sylvia. God, that was such a weird scene. There's so many really weird scenes in that movie where I really appreciated how wrong it all was so often. That it's just like this old, poor, old, fat lady who screams she's hungry for love. And then, yeah. And like, it's just so like there's no compassion towards her. Whatsoever. She just like, yes, you are a disgusting person that wants to have sex now. Do it. And then she does it. And it's like I just kind of love like how cold this movie was in a lot of ways.
I'd like to talk about the lead and how like if you start off with like say Steve McQueen, and then like you were to make a copy of Steve McQueen, you get Ryan O'Neal, the like not quite as good Steve McQueen. And then if you were to make a copy of Ryan O'Neal, you end up with this guy. So he's like two orders of operation away from from Steve, like beautiful Steve McQueen, and you end up with Roger St. Luke, the lead in Shivers, who's like never reacting to anything, like even when he's like terrified, he's kind of like, oh no, this is the end for me.
Yeah, I actually wrote that down as a note also, like how like disaffected he was, where like when she's like, I stabbed him, I think he's dead, he's just like, it's okay. Like,
right,
like
yeah,
everything
yeah,
is
yeah,
clearly
yeah.
going wrong, and he's just like, ah. Just another
I love that there's a scene where he's like in the hospital talking to somebody about something, and he's just like smoking the whole time. I was just like, does a doctor just like light up and smoke in the hospital like that? Oh, the 70s.
Back in the 70s, yeah. One of my favorite scenes in this movie is when he's sitting there and he's on the phone. I think he's talking to his other doctor buddy. I'm not positive who he's talking to, but I think it's that guy. And the nurse is like has been trying to seduce him for like the last couple minutes. And she's just like undressing in front of him while he's like having this like business conversation. And he's like, yeah, we should meet there at 9:30. And he's like, bring the papers that you're working on. But he's like clearly like starting to like get into it.
Yeah. Well, they actually, they're just, that moment they're talking about that paper that the guy wrote, who when he was saying that the people are like, man has become too brain focused or whatever, and like not enough sex in their lives, and they should be more animalistic. So he's listening to that while she's undressing. So he's getting like a really dry version, dry academic text version of what's like right in front of him right now, of like the emotions that he should be feeling. And I thought that was just like the combination of those two things is really great. Absolutely.
Yeah, that kind of brings me back to sort of what I would say in response to Basil about it being conservative, is that I don't know if he's conservative or liberal. Like, he sort of has something that he thinks is wrong with everybody.
Yeah.
And it's like sort of kind of everyone, you know, gets cut in this movie. There's no one who's like, you know, gets off easy. I mean, I guess, you know, the biggest metaphor is sort of, you know, sexual liberation and it being its own sort of zombie-like menace. But I feel like, you know, at the same time, like, I don't know, maybe there's something appealing about, like, if we want to get to her speech after the nurse has been taken over by one of the shivers, and she gives a speech about a dream that she had where she was having sex with an old man and how he was repulsive, but the old man convinced her that it was erotic, that everything was erotic, that breathing was erotic, that physically existing was erotic, and that death was erotic.
And then Dr. St. Luke punches her in the face right after that.
Yeah. I thought that was hilarious. I was like, whoa.
Like, I remember like that moment was something I even wrote down on like one of my like when we did like moments lists. When I was thinking of moments from Shivers, I remembered that moment over the speech, actually. Like, just the speech ending that way was just kind of perfect. It was just again, it was, like, really wrong. Why? She was, like, you really felt bad for her for a long time because she kept getting into these bad situations and then, like, running away and then, like, practically getting sexually assaulted and then, like, getting over that, and then she gets possessed. But instead of, like, having a second to, like, feel sad for her or feel bad that this has happened, he just knocks her out. And that's basically it for her, you know? That's over.
I don't know. I feel like in that speech, and then later also in the pool, where they're all sort of like waiting in the pool, like waiting for him and like looking at him, that there's something that that Cronenberg finds appealing about that. By the way, that was the one that was on my moments list, was the women waiting around in the pool and like how creepy it was. I don't know. I feel like it, for me, it's hard to come away with sort of like an exact theme, but I, you know, I will say that Cronenberg definitely thinks that sex is kind of terrifying. I mean, he continues that in, with Dead Ringers too, making sex like the weirdest possible thing that like people can do.
Yeah, I mean, there's in all of his movies, you know, there's a weird sex in Videodrome and I guess not in Scanners, but he even makes like, you know, birth kind of terrifying in The Brood. So basically the spoils of sex also being terrifying.
Just everything. I love using the word spoils. Look at the spoils of my sex.
Yes, that is a kind of a terrifying sentence. Yes.
To the victor go the spoils. and when James Woods pulls a gun out of his stomach
out of his stomach vagina,
Videodrome is also sort of like a weirdo birth scene,
right?
So
actually, how did you like the effects of the guy of the stomach in Shivers with the thing inside the stomach? I thought those were kind of pretty effective, actually. Especially compared to how sort of silly. The Shivers parasite thing looked. I thought that you know, the stuff popping up in their bellies, like when it moving around in there, I thought that looked really, really creepy and mm-hmm. really just really scary. It also made me think of Alien, obviously, but I thought that those were pretty well done.
Yeah. Something I said before the podcast started that we probably won't have in here was that I posed the question, did this possibly influence Alien? Maybe. Because I know that Dan O'Bannon is a big, you know, fan of horror movies, obviously, and it's quite possible that he got some inspiration for Alien from this movie, with the things popping out of people's stomachs in this. And this predating Alien by about 4 years.
Seems possible.
It's entirely possible. I wouldn't say that, you know, infection, I guess, is like that, you know, rare a theme, though.
It's true. Yeah, I mean, you could go all the way back to, like...
parasitic infection.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could go all the way back to, like, Invasion of the Body Snatchers if you wanted to do, like, you know... I guess people aren't infected in that, but I just have the same kind of, like... I can't remember. Don't they need to, like, get a piece of you to make the copies of you in Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
I haven't seen the original. I've only seen the Abel Ferrara remake. Yeah. So. Okay.
But it's similar enough that, you know, like, it could be easily said that maybe Cronenberg was like, what if it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but instead of just acting normal, everyone wanted to have sex with each other?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a natural extension
of that. Instead
of
it being a metaphor for communism, it's more about, like, dirty thoughts of people.
I thought you were going to say dirty hippies.
Dirty hippies, yes.
Dirty hippies. Thoughts.
That too. So I guess, like, this happens a lot in zombie movies. I don't know, maybe someone can pinpoint why it works so much better in Shivers for me than in anything else. But when he's, like, he opens the door and he's, like, walking up the hill and it kind of looks like maybe he's out of there, and then suddenly, like, a crowd of zombies, like, just starts appearing over the hill and chases him back into the building. That shot and that moment stuck with me really well, and like when it was coming, like when he opens the door and he starts walking up the hill, I was like, oh god, here comes this again. And I don't really have an explanation why, because I feel like a moment similar to that is in a lot of zombie movies, but where the person is like, we're home free. No, you're not.
There's 100 zombies waiting over the next hill. I can't remember specifically seeing that in a zombie movie. I can remember seeing, like, somebody opens a door and then they see, like, a bunch of zombies down the hallway or something like that. I can't recall precisely, like, a bunch of zombies coming over a hill like that, but...
Well, no, I just mean the moment of a person feeling like they've escaped.
Yeah, and then they haven't, really. Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, this particular moment has stuck with me more, even though I feel like it's a staple of the genre.
I mean, and one obvious explanation is that the framing is really cool. Like, the hill kind of just looks like it goes away into nothing. So, like, he's just, like, escaping into, almost into a void, like, space, and then... it gets pushed back, and the way they appear out of the darkness, I feel like they must have had to, like, shoot that, like, a ton of different times to, like, get it to look at, so that the people, like, walk into the frame at the right moment, because, I don't know, choreographing is tough. Making movies is hard, guys.
Yeah, it is. Plus, yeah, the way it's shot, I was just looking at it right now, the way it's shot, the way they're lit, the way the Shiver zombies are lit is really, really impressive. You don't really see them. You see their outlines, and you see, like, just shapes of them appearing in the dark. And, like, that really makes it really, really creepy. Like, they're just, like, and it's not really clear where they are. It's not really clear where they're standing on. It's like they're floating or something also. It was really, really, really cool.
I've definitely seen scenes where there was like way more zombies, and it was somehow like a lot less terrifying than that, like 12 or 13 coming over the hill.
It almost feels like they're like on an elevator or something coming up that hill, or like they're being elevated somehow, and then going down. But yeah, no, that scene is pretty awesome. So the ending really does not disappoint in this movie at all.
No.
I also kind of like the, like, when he's just walking around the hotel, like, looking for, I can't remember if he's looking for the nurse or if he's looking for his friend, and he's just kind of, like, going room to room, and then the people will sort of, like, intermittently appear out in the hallway. Like, there's one person who's just, like, fighting a shiver zombie, like, rolling around on the floor, and he just kind of keeps going on his way, and then there's two dudes who I guess are they're supposed to be shiver zombies, I guess, but they also look like they're just like two gay dudes who are just like, hey, wanna have a party? And then he like runs into another room, and then there's the guy who's offering up his daughter, and he's like running out of there, and then he finally like runs into the room where his friend has been like murdered by the, I guess, like the dude
by Nick,
the shivers
patient
coming out of his
zero
stomach. Kind of. I don't think he's patient zero, though. I think the young girl
is patient one, I guess.
Yeah. I think the young girl is
patient zero. The young girl probably is, yeah, right.
That we see at the beginning.
But he's still gestating them in a way that everyone else isn't.
Yeah. I guess so, yeah.
And way less sexually
driven. And he's also responsible for, sort of everyone who didn't sleep with the girl. He's responsible for, like, everybody else who goes crazy. He's the one who barfs the one over the side.
Yeah.
I was going to say, since Patrick brought it up, that one of the things that did sort of bother me and why I like the movie less is that there does seem to be sort of a weird undercurrent of homophobia in the movie related to men, where, like, previous to that scene, like, those two guys look very obviously like gay dudes in the 70s, but, like, previous to that, anytime there's a guy and another guy, and they're like, one's a shiver and one isn't, the shiver person always reacts to them violently rather than sexually. Like the black dude is not trying to, like, sexually assault him when he attacks him in the, like, basement thing in the same way that, like, men are sexually assaulting women throughout this movie. And, like, something about that seemed odd because, like, there's women, like, kissing other women and things like that throughout the movie. So, like, the fact that it seems to not affect men and other men the same way is never really explained before.
That's possible. It could also just have to do with, like, maybe the shivers just, like, what they're doing is just exacerbating desires that are already there. Like, in that person's brain. So, like, straight people will only want to have sex with, you know, people of the opposite sex, whereas gay people will probably still only want to have sex with, you know, people of the same sex. And so it's possible, because it's hinted at earlier in the movie that the woman who kisses, what's her face, the wife of the guy who's gestating the shivers, I guess it's kind of, like, hinted at that she kind of has, like, you know, a thing for her. Because they spend a lot of time together, and
definitely,
she's kind of, and so I, the way I saw it was like the shivers are just like exacerbating, you know, the desires that are already there, like accelerating them.
But
in that way, it's,
I guess,
possible. It's possible.
I don't know if we could get into.
I don't know if it's
sexual. Like, I feel like if I was, I would consider myself a straight person, but if I was driven into, like, a sexual mania, like an animal, I feel like I stopped discriminating at that point and just, like, sexual release is all that I'm seeking.
That's a good point.
Like, I don't know.
Well,
like,
does that not happen to the hotel guy for a second?
So,
to feel like, the waiter who pops out of the elevator after he assaults the mom with the kid. Right, he pops out of the elevator. He goes after the, who was it?
The security guard.
Right. I think he puts him on the floor and then he like grinds on him, like in a pretty suggestive manner. I don't know if that was him trying to hump him or whatever, but like, you definitely was going at him in a lot of ways.
But it still seems significant somehow that throughout the whole movie we never see a man infect another man directly by kissing him on the face.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
It's true.
I agree with Basil. it is interesting though that there are different strategies like among the Shivers, because there is that, okay, so we don't think that the guy who sort of runs the apartment complex hotel has one in him, because he is acting normal when he's like taking those two people's complaints, and he's like, you just have to like fill out these forms or whatever. He's like, you have to pick up this stuff, and he like takes him into a room filled with, you know, things, and he's like, ah ha, ha. Like,
yeah.
He's like and some people are just like, you know, lumbering towards the other person, like, give
right.
me sex.
Yes.
You know, like, and then like at the end of the movie, when it seems like, I feel like they've gotten the cue that sort of they've all like been converted in that particular apartment mm-hmm. complex, that like everyone sort of in that space has been converted, so they all start, you know, they're no longer fighting within each other, and they all start loading in the cars and driving off to go infect other places. Like they're all sort of like calm and not zombie like how they were before. So there is something there about sort of like different modes of engagement.
Yeah, I think that there's even a slight implication in the radio thing that plays at the very end of the movie, that like the newscaster's like, but the police chief says that this is just crazy hysteria and no one should worry. Like, it sort of seems to be implying that the police chief is like one of the Shivers and issued this press statement to be like, don't worry about it, people aren't being sexually assaulted, it's no big deal.
Yeah.
I feel like Ruben and I have been talking a lot. Patrick and Ilya should take some talking time.
To what you said about the sort of like low budget aesthetic, it did bother me a little bit in some of the scenes. Like, some of the scenes looked a little I guess like you could tell that they didn't have a lot of money to make this movie. But I actually thought that like some of the damage that the Shivers caused to people looked pretty like appropriately disgusting and horrible. Like where the one crawls up that woman's arm and just like burns her arm. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that looks like that's a pretty good like burn, you know, makeup effect that you got going on there. And then when the guy gets attacked in the apartment with all the like stomach Shivers.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That,
I thought that,
that
his,
was so disgusting.
I thought that his wounds looked pretty good too.
Amazing.
Like, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that was also an example of a guy infecting another guy in a slightly suggestive manner by pushing him on into his belly or whatever. Or like, or he...
Yeah. Just like, he was just
and
like,
then,
ah, here's stomach shivers.
Yeah, and that seems just so weird also. Like, I kind of like the idea of like this guy coming over from that laboratory or whatever, and then like the movie constantly like cutting back to him as the events like happen in the building, and like he's on his way, he's like, he's passing the bridge, he'll be right there, and then he gets there and basically dies after like, or like is infected after like 2 minutes. Like, he just goes to the guy's apartment and he gets infected immediately. And so you're basically waiting for him to do something, and then it never really happens, which later was picked up by like The Shining or whatever with the Scatman Crothers, I think, right?
Yeah.
And like, I thought that was like seriously, like really that sort of storytelling thing. I've never really seen it in a movie before, or I don't remember it being in a movie before this one, but I remember it being in a lot of movies after this one. So I think, I don't know if they really referenced it or whatever, but I definitely liked the fact that it was here in this movie already. That was pretty cool. But that scene with him arriving in that apartment and just getting these things all over his face and how he tries to get him off with this. But like, I really remember like this that image is really like burning to my head, like him like trying to unscrew those things from his face.
And I was gonna say, who actually infects the main character at the end in the pool? I remember there's like a slow-mo of somebody.
Well, it's, I don't think it shows, but it's implied that it's the nurse. It's like a bunch of people are holding him. And if you're talking about Dr. St. Luke.
Yes.
And the nurse is like in the pool and she's going like, she's like twisting and turning and she's like walking towards him. Obviously, people listening to podcasts can't see what I'm doing, but I'm making it
very good. It's similar to the snake dance from Lair of the White Worm.
Yeah. So the nurse kisses him. The nurse kisses him.
And there's sort of, she's sort of like, and she's coming towards him. And I don't think it actually shows her like embrace him or anything.
I remember it was like a slow motion shot.
So she kisses him a lot, and then all the other girls come on top of him. So, okay. And guys too, by the way, guys also try to get some of that.
Everybody, pretty much,
get a little bit except of the doctor.
I like how the old guy can't get into the pool, but he just like sits on the edge and like watches, really excited. He's just like,
And then like it immediately after that, it cuts to the scene of the cars driving out. So that orgy really doesn't last long.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's implied that it's still dark, and they're driving out. So like, basically, okay, let's get, you know. I wonder how they organized this. Like, I'm kind of sad that we didn't get to see that.
That's what I'm curious about, the rules of engagement. Yeah. Was it like they, you know, do they have sort of a hive mind consciousness, and once they realized that there were nobody who existed outside of it in that particular square, they're like, time to move on? Or was it just like they had, once they had all successfully had like sex with every single person, you know, in that like area, they were like, all right, let's move on.
It definitely seemed like there was maybe something
bored with these
hive-minded people about it, because there is that part when the doctor and nurse are about to get away and that dude just like totally kills himself to keep them from leaving by like crashing his car into their car, and like for a parasitic organism that seems very uncharacteristic normally.
It's true.
To sacrifice yourself.
Actually, this is interesting.
Sex.
I just found some like at his quote thing at IMDb, at Cronenberg, IMDb. There's a quote from him saying, "Civilization is repression. You don't get civilization without repression, and the basic repression of the unconscious, of the id, and the basic appeal of art is to the unconscious. Therefore, art is somewhat subversive of civilization, and yet at the same time, it seemed necessary for civilization. You don't get civilization without art." So basically, he says that art is repression? Is that what he's saying? That is weird. Anyway, repression is very important to David Cronenberg.
I believe he's making the carnival argument.
Yeah, right. The Bakhtin one. Yeah.
Most people don't really agree with, but the idea that in order to keep civilization going, since everyone has urges that can't be stopped, you have to give them a sort of carnival, a place where they can express those urges, and then, you know, then they can go on with their normal lives by doing it in sort of a safe context.
Yes, right.
One of the more interesting extensions of that is that I've heard in Japan they have a like rooms you can go to, and like you pay money and then you go in this room and you can break everything in the room, just completely destroy the room, and that's like the entire purpose of going there, to just like vent destructive frustration.
Right.
And then you leave. Yeah.
Well, that's just like in just making that sort of basically you create things through making people work way too much. You create like anger and repression, like just mechanically over years, and then you just let them like basically shoot a couple of rounds or whatever. Like Japan also has these shooting galleries where you can customize the targets that you're shooting at and put like a photo of your boss in it instead. And you can
that makes me
basically shoot your boss in the face with a bunch of real bullets. Sure, man, go ahead, go right ahead. Just don't remember, so, just don't forget to go back to work tomorrow. You know, like that's basically the thing.
Yeah, just most recently, the psychological community has the feeling that expressing a you don't actually like purge your anger by doing something angry, that's not actually how the body works, which is that's how psychology feels about that particular idea right now. Like if you're really sad, having a good cry doesn't actually make you less sad.
Okay.
I think I feel that I agree with that, at least in terms of my own personal anger, that like anytime I've gotten really angry at something and then I like threw something, all that did was make me want to throw more stuff, not like stop throwing things.
Yes. Yes.
That's the current psychological feeling on that certain situation. It's that there are sometimes other things that happen that make you not angry or not sad, and people have wrongly associated the wrong thing. So, like, in that case, the thing that makes you not angry is actually exhausting yourself. Right. So destroying the whole room, you would get equally not angry by just going for an hour long and not destroying anything. And like with the sad one, like it's not the having a good cry, it's the like no longer not talking about what you were sad about, like to be like letting, sort of like letting it go. Like, but actually like crying can just make you more sad because your body's like, oh, you're sad now? Okay, we'll just
what does psychology think of when you get really horny and you wanna have sex? So would then having sex would make
it,
you less
it
horny?
You should masturbate or have sex.
But like
psychology thinks you should masturbate or have sex. And go on
with
your day.
Okay, so it doesn't say like masturbation which just makes it worse, you know?
No. it doesn't say
okay,
that.
All right.
That's a little different because it's not really it's an emotion. Well, sort of, but
it's
also physiological, like,
right,
thing
yeah.
happening.
That's true, of course. Yeah, right. Probably the wrong thing to just compare it to like directly, but shiver. Shivers, so that's why I sort of thought about that one.
If you can't masturbate or have sex, there are things that you can probably do to become less horny as well. But that it's perfectly okay to masturbate or have sex and then just get on with your day.
Yes.
Psychologists have long been encouraging of masturbation, in fact.
It would have really surprised me to think that they wouldn't be.
Way before modern society did.
Right.
Good old psychologists.
What else?
Also, another thing I think I liked a lot about the movie is just the fact that they set it in this hotel/ island house, whatever. It really made a lot of sense how like the epidemic just kind of grew and grew and grew, and you didn't have to spend a lot of time with the characters or whatever, and like it just like was pretty effortless in how it went from one scene to the other and kind of gave you the feeling, oh my god, like this whole building is getting infected now. Obviously, soon things are gonna get really wild, and it made it like I thought it was like really economical in the way that it showed all those things happening. Like it was just like, oh, okay, this is gonna happen, and this is gonna happen, and it's gonna go to this room,
which is actually, I would say, kind of surprising for a Cronenberg movie, because I feel like he tends to wander a lot.
I was actually confused as to who the main character was at the very beginning, because it starts off, I don't think you're with any of the people who end up being the main characters. No. In it. You're with this other couple who
are like checking into
the hotel. Yeah, and then it's cutting to the scientist, like the medical scientist attacking the young girl, and you're like, oh, what's going on here? Like, he's attacking her and killing her. Oh my god, this guy's a psychopath. And then you realize that what he was doing was basically like trying to destroy the creation that he had put into her, and I guess.
So he's still a pretty awful guy.
Didn't do a thorough job.
Yes,
yeah, he's still pretty awful.
Revealed
still
to be a really terrible person, right? So it's like,
it's a reverse. Yeah.
Because we're like, oh, this is a movie about zombies. He's a zombie and he's killing that person. And they're like, no, he was stopping her because she was the zombie. Okay. And then like you find out that like he's committing fraud. Yeah. And that he also was like inappropriately touching her when she was like 14.
12,
and,
actually.
12,
yeah.
And the thing is, when that guy tells that story, you immediately stop liking that guy also, because like he knew that this was going on and he didn't do shit about it. Like, he was like, yeah,
and he treats it very offhandedly. He was touching her when she was 12.
Yeah, and he was like, I never understood how he could do that. You know, and like, really, that's your reaction?
He says how he could do it is that he's the money. The other guy is the money. Like, and that was something that I didn't get earlier. He was like, he's not a very good scientist, but he can get a grant like nobody's
business. Right. Yeah.
And so that's why he's been kept around.
Yeah, that's why they kept him around.
Like, that was something I completely missed the first time, because I had no like understanding of like grants and how science
grant money.
You know, actually worked in the modern world. Yeah.
Yeah, and I also thought it was funny that he said he got the grant from an organization that he was basically working to put out of business.
Yeah.
Like, it was some foundation that he was working toward making a cure for the thing.
Really,
that
really good.
Organ donor company.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was funny, too. I was like, wow. There's a lot of...
I just wanted to sort of bring it back to Basil's earlier point, which is that when he was talking about, like, maybe this movie being conservative and why I sort of don't think it is that this movie doesn't start off with like everything is good and then it like goes bad with the zombies. Like, I feel like it's one type of bad at the beginning and a different type of bad at the end. It's this sort of impression. Like, one of my strongest memories from this film is how creepy the opening is.
Yeah.
The advertisement for the apartment complex where like, it's like, you never have to leave. Everything is taken care of for you. And it's like, you know, you get the complete opposite, where it's like, you're completely walled in. Like, it's a completely bordered universe.
Yeah.
And, like, basically what happens is they, you know, go really far the other way. Like, way too far to, like, no borders. And I feel like that's the shift of the movie. It's not sort of from, like, a good situation to a bad situation, but from a completely sort of trapped situation to a completely free situation. And, you know, Cronenberg shows that sort of neither of them are actually particularly good. So that's why I don't think that this movie is particularly conservative, but I do agree with you on the homophobia bit personally, and I feel like that is a problem with this film.
The disco era hadn't happened yet, so
it was a less enlightened time, probably.
Right.
Yeah, I don't think Cruisin' had even been released.
Cruisin' was pretty late. Cruisin' was 80s, I think. Right.
I think it was 1980-81.
Yeah, it was already after disco was no longer really mainstream. So when it was really like underground, 80s underground gay whatever stuff, and it was that was also a fucking weird movie. I think Cruisin' did not do much to lessen homophobia. Really. Like,
no, it was a joke. I've not seen Cruising, but I know that the gay community's response to it has
pretty
been
bad.
Very, when it came out, they all picketed and hated it. But then after a while, then it became like then they liked it, and then now maybe they don't like it again.
Yeah. I'm well, not really now sure. Now it's that's just really
their opinion on cruising is complex.
Now it's really like just a weird sight to see Al Pacino doing poppers, you know, and then watching people get fisted. it's just something really weird about like someone like Al Pacino being in that, like in that environment in a film, you know, like such a like it's like there's something really I don't know, charmingly dirty about that, you know, something that's good.
Charmingly dirty.
Yeah.
And also, yeah, like at the height of his popularity, it's not like he's doing some sort of weird artsy movie to like regain credibility. It's like the guy from Serpico. Here it is.
From Dog Day Afternoon. You're Oscar nominated Al Pacino. Here you go.
I guess we want to wrap it up. Does anyone have anything else they want to say about Shivers?
I remember something Patrick said was something that I also wrote down, which I thought was interesting. The structure of the movie, like that a lot of the scenes are just like cutting between things in ways that are not at all typical for, like, I feel like screenwriting 101 has kind of made it so a lot of movies, like, there's some thing that you have to have, like, each scene have its own arc. And there's, like, one point in the movie where, like, right in the middle of, like, a pretty dramatic scene, it just cuts to that doctor guy in his office, and I think he's still eating.
Yeah.
And just, like, he's, like, thinking about, like, stuff, but, like, and then it cuts back to the scene. Like, it's not a story at all. He's just like, here's what this doctor's still doing.
I thought it was funny that doctor was eating a pickle, too.
Yeah.
In the beginning. I was like, yeah, he's eating a pickle.
Was it in this movie or another movie that I watched where someone was like, hey, give me the pickle, and then like he throws in the pickle and he's like, it's
yes.
That was this movie.
Was
yeah, that was
one.
This
yeah.
movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I watched 8 movies.
Wow.
I wish I could have been watching 8 movies instead of being on the interstate for 4 hours or whatever it was.
You could have watched 5 movies, but you watched Archer and whatnot instead.
Well, yeah, I guess I could have. I did watch several episodes of Archer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so is that it? Does anyone have anything else to say about Shivers?
Yeah, I think we've said a lot about it.
Yeah.
In a pretty concise amount of time, too. We're not even at an hour yet.
Not an hour yet.
I mean, I probably could say more, but I'm happy to wrap it up.
Yeah, me too.
I feel that way.
We could write a paper on Shivers,
and I think Basil has to go soonish.
Yeah, well, I've got a little bit of time, but it would be nice to not rush it.
Yeah,
yeah,
uh-huh. I believe it.
Okay, all right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and I hope to see you next time. Bye.
Bye. The